Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Tradecast. You may think that this is not Eric Bertzlaff, and you'd be correct. This is Nathan Powell introducing the show for the Dynasty Tradecast. Joining me tonight is my lovely co-host, Dan Sanyo. How's it going tonight, Daniel?
Oh, it's good. I'm glad to be back. Happy New Year to you and to whatever that question mark is along with us. But I'm sad that Eric couldn't be here with us for our first edition of the new year, but I'm doing well. A little stuffy, a little under the weather, but you know, we'll pull through because the people need the content, you know?
Yeah, and you call our next guest a question mark. It's more of just like a fill in the blank. When we need a guest, I know where to go to come in the clutch, and that is Russell J. Clay. How are you tonight and this new year, my friend?
I'm good. I'm freezing. My fingers just get, you know, when like you go outside and it's freezing out and your hands just like anything you touch is just like, you just feel like you're going to crumble. That's how I feel.
That's a tough feeling. They make these things that they're really weird. They're called gloves or mittens that you can actually wear on your hands to keep your hands warm. It's really cool.
I mean, that sounds like a good plan, but I tell you, my self-esteem has taken a major hit with the recent weather. I just don't feel like I can do anything. So,
oh, I thought it was just because of the things that I've done, just because of me in the last few weeks, but you can wear these right here.
And on a audio podcast, Dan is showing gloves. So, this is about usually when Eric asks how we did in this week in fantasy. It's week 17, so there was no this week in fantasy. So we will use this opportunity. Dan, I will give you 60 seconds and 60 seconds only to gloat about being the SFB champion.
Man, I don't even want to gloat. I've been trying to be as humble as possible, honest to God. With my mentions that night were just insane. My phone reached a temperature that I didn't think was even attainable. It was, I couldn't even hold on to it. It was crazy that sweat on Sunday night, man. It ended up working out where I didn't even need Monday night, but that sweat was real. Just honestly want to say a big thank you to Scott Fish for putting the whole event on, for all of the sites that donated prizes and whatnot, and all of the fans that came and played and all of the writers that came and played. It was the most fun I've ever had in fantasy football, ever pulling that off, and I still don't really know how I did it, but I got to give some love to Todd Gurley like everybody else is doing. So maybe when that check clears, I'll throw a little money towards his foundation.
For sure, for sure. All right, let's start.
I'd like to brag as well. I got third place in my home league with my brother, so we're going to be making our money back. That check should clear as well pretty soon within the next 7 business days. So.
Third place money's good, man. Third place money.
It tastes good to get your money back, I'll tell you what.
Speaking of good money, the best way you can start the new year is by investing in RotoViz. I want to let you know that you can get a listener's only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all the NFL content and also supports the pod. You can contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and on Twitter, @rotovizradio. Let's dive into the show. This has been a recurring topic pretty much since the Jimmy Garoppolo trade. I feel like we have a weekly Jimmy Garoppolo check-in of how much higher are we on him than we were 6-7 days ago. Well, it's been about 14 days since our last show. So, Dan, how higher on Jimmy Garoppolo are you than you were 14 days ago?
I don't think I'm much higher. You know, we had that episode with TJ, and we kind of dove in, and we all seem to be pretty darn high on him. He's definitely locked in as a QB1. I don't think there's a question there. I just hope they invest in some wide receivers, and I'm kind of hoping they bring Carlos Hyde back. I think he works really well there, makes sense in that system a lot. But as far as Jimmy G goes, mid to in that 6-8 range, probably as a dynasty QB. He's got age on his side. He's looked the part every single week. You keep seeing these stats roll out about how many yards he's thrown for in his first 5 starts with the Niners and how many more it was than Montana and Young. And obviously it's a different time now, but I mean, that's something to be said. He's been really, really impressive, especially considering his surrounding cast. So the connection with him and Shanahan is going to probably prop his price up pretty high this offseason, especially if they fill in around him.
All right. I'll get a little takey here, at least with a question to Russell, and that's so Andrew Luck, he's begun to slide in a lot of dynasty rankings because, you know, the uncertainty with his shoulder, uncertainty with his future in general in the NFL. Russell Clay, is there any way that you would take Jimmy Garoppolo over Andrew Luck in dynasty today?
No. No, absolutely not. I think we're all sort of realizing, if we haven't already, that he's clearly a strong asset for the 49ers, and he's going to be, you know, a fantasy viable quarterback for the next few years. But I do also think there's this thing where players come in the second half of the year and there's not a lot of film on them. And, you know, we see this with quarterbacks and running backs especially. And then the next year, there's sort of some regression. So, I mean, I think he's not going to just do this every game. He's not just going to, you know, put up 35 points every game. But clearly, you know, he's going to be fine. He's going to get, you know, more weapons around him. Kyle Shanahan is clearly, you know, going to optimize him like he did in Atlanta. So I think he's a strong super flex play, definitely a top 12 guy, but a late end, you know, a low end QB1 for me right now still.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that going to that 6 to 8 range might be a little bit aggressive with the lack of, you know, NFL tape on him and teams being able to adjust. So I think in that 10 to 12 range is probably where he should be. But I do think that it's in with his range of outcomes for 2018 that he ends up being like in that top 4 to 6 range. Certainly that would require a great year, but I think it could happen.
And with Andrew Luck, quickly, you know how when John Jones won against Daniel Cormier and then he got tested for steroids and it came back positive? And then, so basically in the rankings, they just take him out. That's what I'm doing with Luck. Like, clearly he's incredible, but I don't know what to do with him right now, to be quite honest. Like, I'm not trading him if I have him, but I'm a little afraid, you know, the shoulder thing was not supposed to be this big of a deal. And now he literally missed an entire season. So I don't think you can just go forward assuming he's going to, you know, be fine. But clearly, you know, if he can get back, then I'm fine with him. But I'm afraid of owning him as a dynasty guy right now.
I'll be a little takey. I can get takey. I'm good at those. It's off season now, so I technically can be. You guys had Jimmy G in that 10 to 12 range, and I said 6 to 8. I would probably put Andrew Luck where you guys have Jimmy Garoppolo. I thought he was overrated to begin with. Yes, the volume is there, and it's crazy, and he's a good quarterback. I'm not going to take that away from him, but his inability to be healthy, and now this shoulder thing has been hideous. Mismanaged from the get-go. And he, like you said, Russell, he's in Europe getting God knows what treatment, right. Taking beaver tranquilizers and steroids and all of these different things to get healthy. And I don't want to mess with that. You know, the upside alone keeps him high enough where, yeah, you can probably go get him for really cheap right now just because of the uncertainty. But I've got zero interest in him and definitely 8 to 10 quarterbacks I'd rather have.
Yep. All right. Let's go on to a player that Russell and I have been fans of, at least I was, and I kind of convinced Russell during the offseason on leagues that we co-owned together. And that's Kenyon Drake. Russell, we've talked about it privately. What are you doing with Kenyon Drake this offseason?
So I think I came to you about this probably 3 weeks into Kenyon Drake's sort of emergence when Damian Williams got hurt. And I was like, man, I think Drake is going to be a pretty good sell high. And you were kind of a little hesitant about that. And I've been kind of surprised because it's almost like, not that people aren't falling for it, but they're not pushing him up the board like I've seen, you know, second half running backs be pushed up the board. Like I can think of like Thomas Rawls or CJ Anderson. Like those guys had like 5 good games and they were top, you know, 5 to 10 dynasty running backs. And now Kenyon Drake comes in and he's been fantastic every game. I mean, I know obviously the fantasy points didn't come in the last 2 weeks, but he's been awesome. And I'm not sure that, you know, he's going to be the lone guy there next year. It seems likely that they're going to bring somebody else in. I'm kind of thinking he's a hold/buy right now, you know, based on what I'm hearing, but maybe the ADP will will push something else out as we head to the off season. But as of now, I actually think he's a hold rather than a sell.
Yeah, the ADP is a good point there, because I think that if he creeps up into that, you know, late fourth, early fifth range of startups, that is when his trade price will react and he'll be end up getting traded for the 106, 107 types. But it still could happen that, you know, like that the market just doesn't react and he ends up being a seventh or eighth rounder and his price doesn't increase on the trade market. But if his ADP creeps into that fourth, fifth round range, there certainly will be a change in trade price.
Yeah, that's definitely, I think, where you flip him, especially if, like you said, Nathan, if the market catches up, that's when you want to flip him. I really like him, and, you know, the Dolphins drafted him rather highly. And the wild card here for me is Adam Gase. I don't know what his commitment level is to Kenya Drake, you know, because we assumed that Jay Ajayi was going to be just a world beater, right? He was poised to have a huge season, and that running game was just abysmal. And then he left, and now all of a sudden that running game's there. And, you know, we hear the little stupid stories about, you know, attitude in the locker room and losing and whatever. But then Ajayi goes to the Eagles and doesn't really get many touches, but still doesn't do all that much. So I don't know what to do with this situation. I like Kenyon Drake. I liked him coming out. I didn't think the world of him. Nathan, I know you've loved him for a long time, but I thought he was going to be a good committee back. So going back to what Russell said, thinking that they bring somebody in originally, I think that's where my train of thought was. But now I don't know. There's so many backs coming into this class, and I think they're going to have to take someone highly if they want one because of you know, the quality of back. So if they want one of the high-end ones, they're going to have to probably reach for it, even though you'd think they'd probably slide down the board more. Otherwise, their best option is probably just waiting on one of the free agents. Because if they can get one of the older guys that can take some of the workload off, and they can kind of keep Drake in that 10 to 12, maybe even 15 touch rate, I think that's where he works best. You don't see him tire out. And he's still explosive, and he's great in the passing game. So I want to say that he's in, like what Russell said, he's kind of a hold buy right now until he gets anything higher than like a sixth. A six round startup is probably going to be just too much to not go ahead and flip him. So I'm holding or buying right now until we see if the market catches up. That's the big difference maker, and Adam Gase is the rest of the difference.
And you're playing with house money if you bought Drake right this offseason. So even if you sell and he continues to thrive, like, you made a huge profit. But I will say, I think what you kind of described here is the Duke Johnson / Tevin Coleman that we've kind of gotten from third round running backs in the past few years. So even if Miami does bring someone in, I mean, even if they do bring someone in, he's still going to have a role. So he is sort of safe in one sense, but Adam Gase, like you mentioned, you have to take into account what he just did to Ajayi. Like, that was so weird. So
weirdest thing I've ever seen. One of the weirdest things I've ever seen. I did not see that coming at all. And then just poof, he's gone. But yeah, you hit it right on the nose, I think, with the way the NFL is right now, and especially in PPR leagues, those backs are so crucial to have. It makes going late RB so much easier. And just picking up those guys rather than, you know, it's nice to have one of the elite guys and then just kind of some fill-ins. But if you can wait until like the eighth before you're going at running back and just pick up a bunch of PPR guys, that's huge. That's really comfortable, and that's right where I'm comfortable taking Drake. I think he could be great. I don't know that he's going to be able to stay ahead with the three down work. I think he's going to start slowing down a bit.
Yep, I agree with that. All right, let's move on to our next guy, and it is Tennessee Titans running back Derrick Henry. Through the first 2 years of his career, it's kind of been a waiting game of when will the Titans move on from DeMarco Murray? When will they stop giving him touches? That answer was not 2017. Will it be 2018, Russell?
I'll tell you what. I went through the many stages of, I don't know if you want to say grief or anger, or I went through many stages of emotions with DeMarco Murray this year. And I came to appreciate just how much pain this man will take just so he cannot have Derrick Henry be a feature back. I truly appreciate how much effort he put into just playing every game, getting his 13 carries for 22 yards, and just calling it a day. I loved every moment of this fantasy season with Derrick Henry on my bench. It was just and the idea that, you know, he tore his ACL and was like, no, I can't let Derrick Henry get feature carries, so I'm going to play with a torn ACL. And then they wouldn't let him, but, I mean, he wanted to. He was going to get those 6 carries for negative 3 yards. He really wanted to do that. So shout out to DeMarco Murray. I really like you. I love Derrick Henry, and I think he's going to be a tremendous featured back if they allow that to happen. So, you know, his price has kind of been inflated the last few years. I certainly wouldn't be selling, but in a startup, I'm not afraid to buy him, you know, depending on where he is.
Yeah, I think that with the incompetence of DeMarco Murray this year, Derrick Henry could sneak into that. And it's kind of weird because of how when he was drafted in rookie drafts, it's like, okay, by year 3, he's going to be like a second round startup pick. I think right now, just because he hasn't shown the workhorse, I mean, he's shown the ability, but he hasn't quite shown it on the field, if that makes any sense. So I think that he kind of maxes out at that mid-third, late-third type price. But I think that's definitely within his range of outcomes. And that could end up being a steal if he ends up getting that 18 to 20 carry type, you know, back.
And that range is always like young guys with potential and depreciating assets. So I think if you're looking at him or one of those depreciating wide receivers, I think you definitely go with him.
This is probably the highest I've been on Derrick Henry and probably will ever be. And we still haven't really seen all that much. You see a flash and then you see a bunch of garbage, and some of that's play calling and some of that's on him and his inability to get lateral on some of those plays. You know, the defense breaks through and they cover him up, but still some of that stuff, you watch him and it's just like he's walking in quicksand going sideways. And I don't get it, because you watch him on other plays and he can get lateral and he can get upfield. Once he gets north, headed north or south, whatever, north and south, it's a freight train and you can't stop him. He has the potential to, Nathan, you said, you know, like second round within the realm of outcomes, he could be a top 5 pick. If he starts getting that work, just because of the freak of a dude that he is, he can be easily in that Zeke, in that DJ, in that Gurley. He can be in that realm if he figures it out, but he's so inconsistent. And I understand that his touches aren't there and he doesn't have consistent touches, but there's a lot of times he gets out there and it doesn't look like he's going 100, like he's trying to earn that work. You know what I mean? It just, he gets out there and he'll have a huge play. Like then this last week, he have like a 60-yard catch or something crazy. And then there's other games, it's like he get a clear toss, he's got a wide open lane, and he tries to get to the boundary for some reason. And I just, there's a lot of things that frustrate with me within his game in the NFL that make me hold off a little bit. But to Russell's point, once you get into that range where it's old wide receivers or young upside, you have to consider Henry here because of his potential huge upside. That, and I haven't been a Derrick Henry guy like ever. But now we're in the season of starting to talk about startups, and that's where you have to go. You know, we have a great rookie class coming in, and there's going to be probably 3 running backs that you're going to move ahead of him just right off the bat. And those guys are going to be overpriced, except for maybe Barkley, who will still probably be overpriced. But you have to consider him once you, and I think at this point it's going to be like early 4th when those players start coming off of the board because of the rookie fanatics and everybody wanting to get the new shiny object, where Henry might kind of go, you know, missed. He might just kind of slide through the cracks and you steal him at that point, because if you can get him in the 4th and now all of a sudden by week 8 in 2018, he's worth a mid 2nd. I mean, that's your ROI right there is insane.
Yep. So let's move on to our next player, and that is going to be Juju Smith-Schuster. This is a guy that obviously I've talked up a lot on this podcast through his rookie season, with talk of his startup price in 2018 and, you know, just talk of his trade value currently. I'm asking myself the question, is it time to sell Juju Smith-Schuster? I think that, you know, he's in a situation where it's obviously very good because he can be a pass-heavy offense as long as Roethlisberger is there in Pittsburgh. Who knows if that's 1, 2, 3 or more years. But the real issue is that into that third, second round range, you have to ask the question, when is he going to be the top target on this team? And it might be never. It might be in 5 years. It might be in 8 years. Who knows when, you know, he supplants Antonio Brown or Antonio Brown retires, whatever it may be. There's just a certain cap of fantasy upside when you're not going to be the guy that's getting, you know, 10 to 12 targets every single game, which Juju won't be as long as Antonio Brown is in his same receiving core.
I think that's definitely a fair take. And so before we get into his value, I just want to point out that hopefully we can put to bed the evaluation method of valuing final season over best season. So I think we can finally let's all put that to bed collectively, guys. It's the best season that matters, not the final season. So Juju is absolutely incredible. We will say that. This all goes back to Martavis Bryant for me a few years ago when people were valuing him as like a top 2 to 3 round dynasty wide receiver, or I guess what, 3 years ago now, before the suspensions and everything. People were not worried about his fantasy value whatsoever with being the second option to Antonio Brown. And while I was never high on him, clearly I see value in that. I think what you're looking at is, you know, 800 to 900 yards a season and 6 to 8 touchdowns as the second option to Antonio Brown. Brown is going to be getting older, so I don't think we're going to be seeing those 1,800 yard seasons. He was going to get that this year before the injury, but I think we're going to see that sort of slide down to like the 1,400 to 1,500 range for the next few years, you know, especially as he is 30 now. So
a real career regression to 14.
Yeah, years. Right. But in terms of team market share, that extra 300 yards, you know, could matter for a guy like Juju. But I have to agree with Nathan. He's not going to be getting, you know, the targets to be valued in the range he's going to be valued this summer. I'm not denying that at all. He's going to be overvalued in best ball leagues. So I think he's a great best ball guy. I do not like him in head to head for next year. So definitely a sell in head to head for me. I just think you can get so much this offseason for him, for a guy you bought with, I don't know, depending on, I mean, what did we get him? We got him in the second round of one of our leagues, Nathan, right? That we did together.
Yeah, we got him at 205 and a 10 teamer.
Yeah. So that's like early second of a 12 teamer. I got him at 112 in another league. So it's like, I mean, realistically, what's the market? You know, what are you trying to get? Cause you can pretty much get an immense amount for him right now. So I think he's a sell, even though I love him and I think he's a tremendous player. I do think he's a sell, but not because he's bad, for the same reason that, you know, I kind of thought a lot of the wide receivers from the past few years were sells, not because they're bad, but because they're just kind of overvalued.
Sort of like Julio Jones.
No. maybe.
Yeah, Juju's a guy I've come around on. You know, it's fun seeing the personality and all of that. I think that adds to me liking him more, just, you know, as like regular football. But some of that translates into me liking him as a fantasy asset more and more. There's a, you know, the upside's capped with Antonio Brown, but I think his value is going to be a little bit more kind of based on what they do with Martavis. Because I would honestly, if I had to pick going down the list, I would say Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, and then Juju, just because of what Martavis brings to the table. I'm not saying that, you know, one's significantly better than the other. They just bring different things. And Martavis is more that prototype wide receiver one that we've seen has clearly not mattered, because we see, you know, 5'10" guys dominating the league. So I think Martavis brings a lot to the table. So I'm going to agree that Juju is a sell if you can get him at, or if you can sell him for those like late second type values, which I think he's probably sneaking into right now, maybe early third. I personally have him as like a low end wide receiver 2-ish, maybe high end wide receiver 3. And that's probably low compared to a lot of people. But I just, I, with Ben, you know, getting older, and we don't know if he's going to retire or whatever, and Antonio Brown's still there, Martavis still there. We don't know what's happening with Le'Veon Bell. There's a lot of things that could potentially cap his upside. Now, if Ben moves on, all of a sudden Juju, I mean, he's not going to have the upside that he had when Ben's playing, unless they go out and get a high-end quarterback and can get close to matching Ben's output. Yeah, I'm going to keep moving Juju up my boards, I think. He's shown that he can do just about everything. You know, that there was a lot of, like you talked about, Russell, a lot of hate coming out from his final year just because he didn't look all that great. That's because teams found out that he was pretty great, and they started playing him differently, and USC was using him differently, and there's a lot to be said and go into that. So yeah, I'll keep moving Juju up, I think.
Another guy who is moving up boards for most people is Chris Godwin, Tampa Bay Buccaneers wide receiver. He had quite a few solid weeks in the last few weeks, along with the decline in fantasy of Mike Evans as well. So, Russell, what are your thoughts on Chris Godwin entering year two? I think that out of all these guys we've talked about, he's the one who could literally vault from, you know, a guy you consider in like the sixth or seventh round right now to like by March, people are going to be like drafting him in the fourth round.
Ugh, and I want to throw up thinking about that. Like, no, stop it. Dude, there's been this push, like he's a presidential candidate, like for him to be this guy, and he's fine. Like, I like his athletic profile. I thought he was a pretty good college player, but no, sell, get out of it. He's fine. He's fine. He probably has potential. No.
I'd rather have Godwin in the fourth than Evans in the first.
Oh God. You're one of them.
You're right. I am one of them that likes fantasy points and Mike and disregarding Mike Evans one good season. You know, the touchdown upside's there for Evans for sure. That's what he does. That's what he's known for. But he's never going to get 170 targets again. He's a 140 target guy. He's going to catch 50% of them, and you have to hope that he gets 10 or 12 touchdowns. That's the way it works. He's a wide receiver too. Yeah, I like.
I'm not letting you get away with that one.
Don't tell me he's going to get 170 targets ever again, and tell me he's going to be more efficient with his catches.
That's well. I mean, he had 135 in 15 games. So I mean.
Right, he was on pace for 100. No, he was on pace for 139 or something like that. 144.
Yeah. And it was really 14 and a half because he got kicked out of that other game. So
sure, he extrapolated so stats. Like he catches 6 touchdowns.
150 targets. So
I did the math. Russell,
also
44.
4,500 yards in his first four years. That's like top three ever for first 4 years of a career. So it's pretty
sure. Good. And he's like 25 years old.
And unsustainable touchdown production.
I don't disagree that he's going to be very inconsistent year to year, clearly. But
that's my issue with him. And that's, you know, there's that big brigade of wide receiver one or 101 in startups. And it still exists. Yeah. People still want him over anybody. And that's insane to me.
Yeah, no. Insane. Especially with some of the guys who have emerged at running back. I agree. 170 targets might not happen again.
It will not ever happen again, ever in the history of the NFL, unless every single person on that offense dies.
So, and to circle this back to Godwin and then close out on the NFL portion of this show, Chris Godwin, do you see a similar like hype train happening this offseason? What do you think his value is going to do this offseason?
It's going to get crazy, but it's going to depend on where Mike Evans' contract discussions go, right? Because has he been signed? Has they done that yet?
I mean, they picked up his fifth-year option. So.
Okay. So, but they need to work on that. They need to get him signed before, you know, honestly, I think they need to get him signed before the end of next season. So during the offseason, I think we're going to see Godwin work into that wide receiver three range. And he'll probably start picking up some crazy pace because of the amount of passes that are going to be thrown on offense, even though Jameis is garbage. Obviously Evans is still the number one target there, but if you can have those two guys working on the outside, that's scary offense. That's a really scary offense. And if they can figure out how to do anything in the running game, that's only going to help prop those outside guys up. So I think realistically you have a low end wide receiver one in Evans, maybe whatever. And you have a potential wide receiver three in Godwin. I think he can move higher than that. We'll see what happens with Evans in the future. If he has another schlub in 2018, they could move on and just be like, you know what, Chris, you're a guy. And they move forward with that. They bring in some underneath help to help him. get a slot guy and just roll with it. There's a lot to go forward to get Godwin into some like serious dynasty value, but it's in, you know, we talk about the realm of outcomes. It's in that realm of outcomes because of Evans' inconsistency and whatnot. I've liked what I've seen from Godwin. I liked him coming into the season. So I think he's most definitely a hold. If you can get him for a decent price, I think you got to buy. But I think this offseason push is going to get him to a place where he might not even be holdable. You might be forced to your hand to sell because of the value you're going to get in return.
You know where else you can get great value in return? Our friends at the FFPC. They have the longest running and most unique playoff contest in the fantasy football universe. And the whole universe, Dan, crazy. The FFPC Playoff Challenge, it's $200 to enter with a $100,000 grand prize and $600,000 total prize pool, paying down to 550th place. With no salary cap and no draft to worry about, simply choose 10 players to make up your team's roster, but there's a catch. You're only allowed to use one player from each NFL team. That means if you choose Tom Brady as your QB, you may not have any other Patriots on your roster. This will be your roster for the duration of the entire playoffs, including the Super Bowl. There will not be any changes, substitutions, or free agent pickups once rosters are locked. As NFL teams get knocked out, so will your players. So choose your team wisely. The contest is capped at 3,500 total entries and will sell out as it does every year. Registrations will close on Saturday, January 6th at 4:30 p.m. Don't wait. Go to myffpc.com and get your team now. That's myffpc.com. Get your team and in your season. I tell you what, I've seen a lot of cool playoff formats. FFPC definitely does one of the best out there for sure.
Yeah, it's legit. I'm going to probably get myself an entry into that, and then you guys can say that you beat an SFB champion. So there you go.
Yep. All right. So we've had a segment in the past called Rookie or the Vet. And I normally sing along with that, but I'm not going to today because we're going to do Rookie
what?
Or the Devy, and it doesn't sound as good. So Rookie or the Devy, we're going to compare a rookie from the incoming class. Most of these guys are seniors, but for those that aren't, I'm just assuming that they will be entering the draft, and I'll compare them with a Devy player that I think should be valued similarly or could be valued similarly by our fellow co-hosts. So we'll start off, and for the quarterback's sake, we'll assume it's Superflex because no one actually takes quarteracks in Devy. In one QB leagues. So our first matchup is going to be actually the matchup from the Rose Bowl, and that's going to be Baker Mayfield of Oklahoma and Jake Fromm of Georgia. I'm pretty sure I know where you're going with this, Dan. Who do you take, Mayfield or Fromm?
Wait, is this Jake from State Farm, or is this – sorry. that's the worst joke ever, but it's still funny to me. Yeah, I'm a Baker guy through and through. He's my quarterback one in this class. And I, you know, Jake's like, he's really good as a true freshman. You know, the freshman mistakes are going to be there and, you know, whatever, but he's looked the part for sure. I like him moving forward, but I've got to take Baker here.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you start talking about true freshman versus a guy who's going to go, you know, in the first round ish range. I think unless you're truly against that guy as a prospect, which I'm not with Baker Mayfield, I'd have to go with him. If it was a different position, maybe I changed my view, but it's not like there's many bad things you can say about Baker Mayfield. So I think that one, you have to go with the guy who's going to be in the league sooner.
Got to take the points, baby. Take the points.
Yeah, I'll make it a clean sweep here. I think that Mayfield just is simply the safer guy at this point. Mayfield's not going to fall out of like the second round. I mean, out of the first round of the NFL draft. So at the worst, he's a late first round pick. Jake Fromm still has 2 years of tape to put out, and you know, injuries and things of that nature can end up making him not drafted. So there's so many things that can happen between now and when Fromm is drafted that I'll take the safety involved of a guy who is going to be a first round pick in the 2018 NFL draft.
Don't get it twisted, though. Hold on. Don't get it twisted, though. Fromm's still a high-end, you know, Devy option in a super flex league. You've got to, you know, he did all this as a true freshman. He looked good doing it. So don't take this as a hit on him. This is just easy points with Mayfield.
For sure. All right. The next one, and maybe this one will be a little bit harder simply because of how good he was in his freshman season. Jonathan Taylor or Nick Chubb as a guy who he has, you know, recovered from his injury. But and it's one of those things that it's like he was so good before the injury that people are like, wow, he's so great, but he's still not as good as before the injury. Well, even if he's not, he's still going to be a really good NFL back. But is he going to be a better NFL back than Jonathan Taylor, who put up absolute video game numbers this year? We'll start with Russell.
I think this one is another one where you take the prospect who's already heading into the NFL in a really good position. Obviously, he had the major injury, but he had a great senior year to really fully round off any of the concerns that you had over that major injury. I certainly think there are going to be people that point to major knee injury and say he's not the same player, but I highly disagree with that based on what we've seen in 2017. So I'm going to take him. I think he's a better prospect overall than Taylor. So that's kind of the direction I'm heading, but man, Taylor looks fantastic. Did all this as a freshman. So he's looking like a pretty special back. Again, though, with Devian, it's something I try to emphasize a lot. I don't want to be waiting. You still have to wait 2 to 3 years. Running backs tend to head out earlier, but you're just still going to be waiting a while. I mean, like I was getting excited about James Washington in what, 2015, summer of 2015, and it's 2017 now, and I'm still waiting for him to be in the NFL. So it's like, it's a long haul to wait, especially on some of your Devy teams. So if you can get Nick Chubb now, that's the move for me.
Yeah, I'm in the same spot. Chubb, he's been just unbelievable, honestly. That whole Georgia backfield has been unbelievable. And I'm not too worried about, being the same player as he was before the knee. I think he's more developed now. I think he's ready for the game in the NFL, and I think he can do it all. I don't know that he's nor will he get there, in the elite tier of NFL running backs or potential NFL running backs, but he is really, really, really close to it. So I'm going to take Chubb here. I do like Taylor quite a bit. Obviously, the numbers are hard to argue with. But, it's Nick Chubb by a decent margin here.
Yeah, I'll be the contrarian here just simply because I don't want us all to have the same exact answer. And I'll say that I'm not sure I would trade either for the other, just because I think that Taylor has the ability to enter that level tier of prospect as a guy like Zeke or a guy like Todd Gurley. Maybe not quite that level because those are some of the best backs we've ever seen. But Taylor has had that type of freshman season where, if I have him on my team, you would have to give me a mountain-sized offer for me to trade him. Let's move on to the next one, and this is going to be Royce Freeman, senior running back at Oregon, or Demarie Crockett. Demarie Crockett is a guy at Missouri who had a huge freshman season, 1,062 rushing yards, 10 touchdowns, averaged 6.9 yards per carry. Nice, of course. had a sophomore season where he was kind of riddled with off-the-field issues as well as injuries, but he still averaged 6.0 yards per carry, 481 yards in only six games, so... For me, I'll just start off with my take here. I think that Freeman is pretty much in all these scenarios, the guy going into the NFL this year is the safer option. But Crockett is a guy who I think could go, top 40, top 45 picks in the NFL draft as long as teams are concerned with the off-the-field stuff. I think Freeman kind of maxes out as that, third-round type guy. So I'll roll with Crockett. Dan, are you with me or are you against me?
I'm with you on this one, Nathan. Crockett, I've enjoyed watching him. That freshman season was awesome. Obviously, the off-the-field issues were moderately concerning. I don't know if we've had any spats of late, but I much prefer the talent there. I've never been a Freeman guy. I know there's a pretty big crowd that does love him, that's excited to see him play in the NFL, but I just don't see the upside that I see with Crockett. So I'm gonna stick with that. I know Russell's over there itching to get a say in here because I'm pretty sure one of these guys is like his guy.
Okay. If you want to talk about waiting a long time, I have been waiting a long time for Royce Freeman to be in the NFL. I mean, my goodness. It's been a long hike and there's been a lot of haters and losers along the way, but we're ready. We're here. He's going to go into the combine and be slightly more athletic than people think. Not a lot. He's going to be like an average athlete, and people are going to be surprised by that.
It probably wouldn't take a whole lot for him to be more athletic than I think he is. If he finishes the 40, I'd be impressed.
Yeah, man. No, I don't deny that he does look kind of like a slug sometimes. Like, he does. But I think the all-around production that he's produced at 230 pounds is pretty special. Like, just based on historical comparables, guys who are that big, who have been those type of all-around weapons at Power 5 schools, you know, tend to be good in the NFL. So I do like him quite a bit more than Crockett at this stage. I just think, you know, the 4 years of production and the resume that he's built is just pretty significantly better than Crockett. But Crockett did look really good his freshman year, so I won't deny that. And you're potentially looking at the RB1 next year if all these guys stay in 2018. So that certainly will have value to it, you know.
For sure. Let's move on to our next one, and it is going to be our first wide receiver pairing of the night, and that's Courtland Sutton, a guy that's been hyped all over Devy and fantasy Twitter the last couple of years, and a guy that's kind of expected to be, you know, a top 16, top 18 pick in the NFL draft. Versus N'Keal Harry of Arizona State. So, Dan, what is your take on these two wide receivers?
Man, this is a tough one. First, shout out Nick Whalen. Hi, Nick. Courtland Sutton's your boy. We all know that. Love everything he brings to the table. This 19 class, though, man, this 19 class of wide receivers is going to be something special, I think. N'Keal Harry is going to be... I think I have it tough between him and Metcalf as far as my wide receiver one for that class, but there's depth there, and Harry's just you can't even put a word on him. He's special. Honestly, I think he's the real deal. I think he can be a wide receiver one pretty early on, no joke. And I don't think Sutton's too far behind, honestly. But I think even though I think Sutton's going to come into the NFL and I think he's going to produce, I think the potential ceiling for Harry in having to wait just a little bit longer is it's tough to pass up. I'm going to go Harry here just because I think his ceiling is legitimately one of the best wide receivers in the NFL.
I love watching N'Keal Harry. It's just such a breath of fresh air after like three straight wide receiver classes.
So bad.
And not that there's nothing, just that there's never been a for sure, like, well, I thought Juju was a pretty for sure guy, but then after his, you know, final season, I did have to like knock him down a little bit. But Harry, man, he has the most upside we've seen from a wide receiver prospect in quite a while. So I do like Sutton. I actually have raised him in my ranks over the last year or so. I think he's put together three really productive seasons for a team that was really bad around him. You know, obviously they got better this year, but they were really bad those first 2 years, and he continued to produce. So I do like that. I do have worries about the small school thing, and that's, you know, I sort of have him going in that late first, early second round range right now until I see athletic testing, because I've just been bit on these small school receivers before, and I think he'll be fine, and I don't think he needs to test out great to go high still, but I do have some worries, like, what if he's like really bad, you know, like really slow and really unathletic, then, you know, we're gonna have to recalibrate a little bit. So I think it's clearly Harry, just because Power 5 has that same similar size, but has shown, you know, more all around game, and it especially, you know, has been used on punts a little bit, been used in the running game a little bit, gets, you know, short passes, long passes. He's just everywhere on the field. He's like, he's everything, you know. He reminds me of Dez Bryant pretty much. So not Dez Bryant, age 28, Dez Bryant. No. Like, age 21, Dez Bryant.
I'm right there with you. Yeah. I love that comp.
All right, I'll round it out with, I will also take N'Keal Harry here. I think that it's a tough pill to swallow to not take the guy that's probably going to go like 104, 105 in rookie drafts this year. But I'm swinging for the fence. I'm taking the guy that I think goes 101 in 2019. The Arizona State's still going to be bad, but you know, it doesn't really matter. Harry's still going to, you know, perform. We'll go on to our final pairing of the night, and that is a guy that Russell alluded to a little bit earlier about he's been waiting since, like, he went to prom with him, like, 6 years ago. of Oklahoma State or DK Metcalf. So this is a battle of Dan's boyfriend and Russell's boyfriend. Russell, talk about your man.
Did you say, so DK Metcalf versus James Washington?
Correct.
Oh, no, that's a tough one. I don't know. I guess these are kind of the decisions you're going to have to make, especially in, like, Devy startup leagues. Again, you want to take the points, and I've loved James Washington for a few years now, but I think towards the end of the year, we started to see what DK Metcalf could do when healthy, and it's potentially special. Obviously, has the body, has the frame, has, you know, the skills and probably the athletic profile to go along with it. Washington is not a prototypical player, so I'm going to take James Washington because I'm extremely biased, but I probably shouldn't. And if I were giving advice, I'd probably lean Metcalf if I'm being unbiased, but I'm biased. So Fox News, here you go. That's it.
Yeah, it honestly is a tough one just because I think James Washington comes into the league and he puts up some nice numbers. I don't know that he ever gets into that, you know, that true wide receiver one, wide receiver two range. I think he's probably a good wide receiver two on a team. But man, DeKalen Metcalf, just seeing him coming out of high school, watching all those videos on like 247 or whatever, it's been insane. He's super special. His freshman year was a little bit disappointing with the injury and whatnot, but he has been. He's legitimately special. He's what, like 6'4", 220, and he looks like he could just burn the doors off any barn that you could put in front of him. He and Harry for me are 1A and 1B, and I still don't know who to put where. So I think I would take both of Harry and Metcalf over Sutton and Washington, mm-hmm. even though it's tough to avoid points because I do believe both those other guys are going to put up points. I just think Harry and Metcalf are world-class wide receivers, and I believe that they're going to be legitimate in the NFL.
I'll close this off with, I'm going to side with Russell here. I'm going to go with James Washington. This guy, and obviously people are going to point to, oh, it's Big 12. They don't play defense in the Big 12. Well, James Washington has been incredible the last three seasons. Three seasons of 1,000-plus yards, capping it at 1,549 in 2017. Three seasons of 19 yards per catch or more. And three seasons of 10-plus touchdowns. Those numbers and then not succeed in the NFL. I'm all aboard James Washington. I think that if Washington and Sutton go in the similar range in the NFL draft, I'll be trading down a couple spots and just taking Washington while everyone else in the fantasy community picks Sutton.
I actually like that take a lot. I think that's a smart move. I think there's a lot of a legitimate argument that you could say that Washington's better. I still have Sutton, I think just nosing him out, but I'm not 100% positive on that. I need to watch a little bit more James Washington. It's crazy. And before we close up, I know Russell has one more thing. It looks like he's ready to say, if we're going to do the whole Big 12 doesn't play defense, then can we stop just counting the Pac-12 as a Power 5? Because they're not. They're so bad.
So I just count them all. Like it's Power 5. It's Power 5 or you're not. Like, and clearly there's different levels of defense from the SEC, you know, to the Big 12, who runs a lot of shotgun and pistol, and then, you know, and then the Big 10, who's mostly running. So, I mean, it's all different, and you need the context everywhere. But, yeah, I mean, it's inflated, but that's what market share is for. And I was just going to say one thing. It's funny because I started off this whole like section by talking about how take the points, and then, you know, I'd probably take Metcalf and Harry over both those guys. So, you know, special occasions are special occasions, and both those guys look like pretty special occasions. So,
and the trade cast is a special occasion. So we're now best friends, Russell, you can ditch Nathan and we can start co-owning some teams together.
Alrighty, that'll wrap us up. Make sure that you rate and review the podcast. Tell us how much you love us, how much you love our guests. That always helps us out on the money side. You know, we're making millions over here. So Russell, we always love having you on the show. So any advertisements for us or anything of that sort?
Yes, I have a draft guide that just came out within the last 2 weeks. We wanted to get it out early so people had some hashtag content for the bowl season. So we've been rolling with that. A lot of positive responses so far. So certainly check us out, Dynasty Command Center with Curtis Patrick and Ryan McDowell.
Is that going to be updated as it goes on, or is that just kind of set?
So we wanted to get the initial rankings out there and the initial write-ups all done, because basically all the games have been played. But then we're going to have an update after athletic testing and then after the draft. So we're going to – obviously, like right now, there's a lot of unfinished business with these prospects. So
sure,
going to be updates.
I like that. Definitely go pick that up, fellas and ladies. That's something special. I've seen a few snippets of some content there, and not only is the Command Center good, but this rookie guide is something really nice.
Alrighty, that'll do it. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Hopefully you have Eric.
Hopefully not.